This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Republicans have been asking for public trials, and they're about to get them. The House voted to formalize the impeachment inquiry into Donald Trump. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman arrived in full uniform to deliver the most damaging testimony yet. He considered Donald Trump's conversation with the president of Ukraine a potential threat to national security. And North Carolina's back in the spotlight this week. A three-judge panel orders the state to throw out its gerrymandered congressional maps. What's that going to mean for the 2020 election? Ken Rudin knows, and he's going to tell us. Hello, Ken.
Ken Rudin knows the
answer. Tell us how it's going to come out. The 2020 election, Ken, starting at the president, how's it going to come out? Before we get there,
okay.
Let's talk about the impeachment proceedings this week. Where are we now after that vote yesterday in the House?
Well, as you say in the introduction, you're exactly right. The Republicans have been calling it a sham process because it's been behind closed doors. There's been no vote. And the Democrats probably hurt themselves by not having a vote, so they had a vote yesterday, and the vote was 232 to 196. Every Republican voted against it. Only two Democrats voted against it, but it was on partisan lines. So what changes is the fact that it now goes public. There'll be public testimony. The Republicans have been demanding that for weeks. It's no longer illegitimate because it's been voted on. What doesn't change, though, is probably anyone's mind on Capitol Hill, because as you said, given the testimony, the dramatic testimony we've seen over the past week or two from people who basically witnessed or overheard or listened to the president trying to work out a deal with the Ukrainian president to, we're going to withhold aid to your country unless you give us dirt on Joe Biden. I mean, that's big stuff, and it's been corroborated over and over again. We'll see if anybody's minds have changed.
Well, and this gets back to something we've said over and over again. Obviously, if this were a criminal trial, it would be over by now, and we'd be talking about sentencing at this point. The evidence is in. But it's not a criminal trial. This is a political process. You say divided along partisan lines. So was it for Nixon. He never faced formal impeachment, and Bill Clinton, the same thing. It's really the politics that determine the outcome of these things, right?
That's absolutely true. But here's what's so different about these times. When there was an impeachment inquiry in 1974 with Nixon, only four members of the House voted against it. Even with Bill Clinton in 1998, only 63 members voted against it. As a matter of fact, 31 Democrats voted in favor of it. This time, not a single Republican in the House voted for it, even though we know a lot of Republicans feel that what the president did, it may be either illegal or impeachable. And yet the president said, look, you have to stand with us or you'll face political consequences. And that's what the Republicans are doing so far.
All right. What can we expect in terms of public testimony?
Well, that's a good question, because there are a lot of people, some like John Bolton, the former National Security Advisor, who has threatened to talk about what the president has done and what has been illegal and regarding Ukraine and other foreign policy debacles. But he now is hinting that he won't testify. And even though the Republicans got what they wanted, a public vote on the process, that doesn't mean Trump is going to say it's okay for you guys to testify. So there may be a lot of subpoenas coming out, and there will be more and more testimony from cooperating witnesses, but there are so many who are not going to be cooperating, and that's probably going to continue throughout the whole process.
Also, we've got a hint at Republican tactics going forward. Again, I guess they say when the law is against you, you argue process, and when the process is against you, you argue the law. Law is obviously working against the president because the testimony is pretty clear about what he did and what that would be in a legal process. But here's what happened. In a decorated Iraq War veteran, Alexander Vindman, nothing but a stellar career in the United States military, delivers the damaging testimony. Yeah, I heard him on the phone. That's exactly what he did. And to me, it was a threat to national security, because clearly to me, Vindman, this isn't right. Wow. And what did they do but attack the career of this military veteran?
That's the thing that goes well beyond the pale. They're disloyal or they're traitorous. I mean, it's one thing to say, well, you know, it's Adam Schiff being Shifty Schiff because he's a partisan Democrat, things like that. But when you have decorated Americans who served for their country for 50 years like Bill Taylor did last week, like we heard with Vindman, and all these people testifying, the fact that they're being denounced as disloyal and traitorous goes well beyond anything we've ever seen with Nixon. And speaking of Nixon, by the way, you know, this weekend is the end of daylight savings time. So remember, turn your clock back to 1970.
You know, it's also interesting. Only what do we have? Two presidents who were formally impeached, Clinton and Andrew Johnson, and only four who have been faced impeachment proceedings in our entire history. Three of them in the last of the last eight presidents. In other words, in my lifetime, three of the four presidents who've ever faced impeachment proceedings, you know, are sort of in American history. That's kind of incredible how this much has happened very recently.
It is, and it just shows how, I mean, even when you think of all the egregious things done by Nixon to cover up the Watergate scandal, there was, you know, there was still Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee who said, look, this is just, you know, untenable. I mean, when you think of Barry Goldwater and the other Republicans who went to him, said the jig is up. I mean, there were Republicans who stood up for conscience over party. We're not seeing that now.
We'll see. If the economy turns south and people turn against the president, then we'll start to see some Republicans change their mind. I'll bet.
Maybe.
Just mark this date on your calendar.
Okay.
Listen, 2020 election now, really very interesting. North Carolina once again finds itself center stage in the 2020 election with a Superior Court three-judge panel in North Carolina overturning the congressional maps, which are clearly gerrymandered. Only three of the state's 13 delegates to the U.S. Congress are Democrats, even though it's a 50-50 split when they come out and vote. So something's wrong with that. New maps by 2020. What could this mean?
Well, this is interesting because the primary, the North Carolina primary, is March 3rd, and the three-judge panel said, look, this has to be, look, whatever you think about partisan redistricting, the fact is that the Supreme Court last June said, we want no part of this, it's up to the states. So North Carolina said, okay, well, we'll take care of this. And as you say, it's 10 Republicans, 3 Democrats, even though the state is split in half. It probably would have been 11 Republicans and 2 Democrats if the Republicans could have done that too, but they couldn't. So they're going to have to redraw the lines. And the judge panel says, look, if you're unable to do it before March 3rd, we'll postpone the primary. We'll delay the primary. But there's no way a fair election could be held in 2020 with the current lines the way they are now.
It's interesting. If you get a more representational, a more democratic in both senses, both in the sense of restoring democracy to North Carolina, but also more Democrats in Congress, what do you think that does to the national push to end gerrymandering and come up with another process around the country?
Look, as I said, it's been going on for years. Democrats are just as guilty of it as Republicans, although Republicans have brought it to a new fine art. We did see in 2018 when the state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania redrew those lines in time for 2018, the Democrats made big gains. More and more, I mean, look, racial gerrymandering we know is unconstitutional, and at least we've seen a lot of efforts to get rid of that completely. But more and more people feel that this partisan gerrymandering, especially in a state like North Carolina, just violates the will of the people, given the fact that it's a 50-50 state, and yet you would never know it by looking at the lines in the congressional delegation.
Hey, Ken, I want to switch gears here and talk about the loss of former North Carolina Senator Kay Hagan, who passed away this week after a long illness. Talk about her political contributions.
Well, you know something, I mean, she was, 2008 was an amazing year for North Carolina. It elected, you know, it helped elect Barack Obama, and elected its first, it elected its first female Democratic senator because Kay Hagan defeated Elizabeth Dole. But it was a great moment for Democrats. It was an exciting moment. Kay Hagan basically came out of nowhere. And yet, there's something, you know, something your producer said, we'd love to talk about Kay Hagan and her vote against DACA. And I think this is very significant because, not to speak ill of the dead, and of course there's a lot to talk about in Kay Hagan's amazing career, but the fact that she was one of 5 Democrats who voted against the DREAM Act and voted against Barack Obama's effort to have executive action on immigration, it cost her with Latinos. And the fact that she lost re-election to Tom Tillis in 2014 by only 1.6% of the vote, it shows that even your allies can turn against you if you veer away from what is seen as the correct course. And Latinos were asked at the time, well, what if your actions help elect Tom Tillis? And their answer is, We need to hold everyone accountable, and that's why really every vote matters, for good or for bad.
And you may have conflated two votes there, because it was Tom Tillis who voted against that executive order, and I think that's what's interesting, is that in both cases, Tom Tillis, her successor, absolutely alienated a big part of his base by voting against Donald Trump. And Kay Hagan alienated an important part of her base. But it shows you how purple North Carolina is, that in order to get elected in the general, you really need to be very close to that line, especially on immigration, as both did. Both crossed over to the other party and both paid dearly for it within their own base.
Exactly. And that's why 2020, and I've said this on your show many times before, it is ground zero for what to watch in very tight elections, both in the Senate, both for presidential. North Carolina is key.
Political junkie Ken Rudin. We'll talk again in a couple of weeks. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a look back 40 years ago at the Greensboro Massacre. We'll talk about a lawyer who took part in a very important lawsuit against the city of Greensboro. Talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.